I had the same problem as Danny. There's not a lot of instruction given, but the good part there is you go where you want to go. So thinking about the covenants, and especially the idea of being comfortable with the covenants, no way really to delve into some of the things I'd love to talk about. When you think about the distinction of covenants that are found within the pages of the Bible, that maybe plant a little seed of encouragement to why it's important to think about the covenants, and especially the idea of maybe how I took it in the idea of being comfortable with them. There are a lot of covenants that are mentioned within the Bible. Mine typically goes, well, we're talking about Old and New Testament. The simple idea is there are all kinds of covenants that are discussed. There are covenants between individuals that were made within the pages of the Bible. We see covenants that are made between God and individuals. Or there's one specifically identified as a covenant going to be with Noah. And not the rainbow, but even in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 18, I'm going to make a covenant with you, even concerning the building, the construction of the ark, the saving of his family, that God will do all of those things. Our covenants, of course, made with Abraham, with Isaac, with Jacob, pointing down through their son of time, that through him, not only was Abraham going to grow into this great nation, his family was going to inherit the land that he was not just a sojourner in, and ultimately one day in his seed, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. So Genesis 12 and verse 3, there's a covenant that God is making with even Abraham and his family. There are covenants made with nations. And more specifically, maybe we think about God's covenant that he would make with Israel. There are covenants that he would make with all mankind. That's maybe where our mind could go to the rainbow after Noah and his family gets off the ark. Here's a covenant not just made with that small family, but really a covenant that is going to be made with all of humanity. Genesis 9 and verse 12. That this was a covenant for all time. So that even today we look up in the sky with the rain clouds that come and we see the rainbow, we need to be reminded. Oh, God's going to destroy the world one day, but he's not going to destroy it again with a flood as he did in those days. And then, of course, the gospel. The gospel, that covenant that's open, that's available, that in that sense is made even for all of the world. And so there are a lot of covenants. But what is a covenant? Another word we use, and again, maybe we think about the Testament, the Old and New Testaments. But simply the idea of a confederacy. We're going to come in a confederacy together. You and I are going to come to some agreement. We form this covenant, a league. Maybe an older term that we don't use quite as much in that same way, but a league, maybe between two nations that come to an agreement. I think in our vernacular, if you will, we're going to use the term contract. It's a contract between two parties. So, if we think about all of these covenants, number one, I'm going to say we have a goal. And our goal is to know, to understand, and to adhere to the covenant that we're under. That sounds simple, but I would suggest to you a lot of people struggle with that in the religious world around us. They don't know what covenant they're under. They don't know what the covenant says. They don't know what they're supposed to submit to. Perhaps, I'll take Josiah. Josiah's going to grab a lawnmower and he's going to go down the street. And he's going to find somebody and he's going to mow that lawn. And then he's going to go, he's going to knock on that door and he said, I mowed your lawn. I'm here to collect my payment. Probably, the homeowner's going to slam the door. If they talk to him, they're going to say, I don't know you. I didn't ask you to mow my grass. We didn't have a covenant. We didn't have an agreement. We didn't have a contract. It's a principle of work. But shut the door. Some cities used to have these people that would go around and you'd stop at a stoplight and they'd come up and start washing your windshield. And all of a sudden they'd expect, hey, I didn't ask you to wash my windshield for me. Some people have that concept even in religion. They think about people that think, well, I've lived a good life, and here I'm looking for the great rewards that I expect God to give me. And Jesus spoke to that, and he comes to the conclusion on the Sermon on the Mount. There's an expectation we ought to live under the covenant of God, but there's a lot of things that might have come out of that covenant, out of that contract. And so they're going to be those who say, Lord, well, do we not do all of these things in your name, Matthew 7 and verse 21? Do you remember the response? You drop down to Matthew 7 and verse 23, depart from me, I never knew you. We're not under covenant together. Why? Because you didn't do the will of my Father which was in heaven. You didn't live under that contract, and so you don't get to enjoy the benefits or the rewards, we might say, under that contract. Again, we look around in the religious world, how many people want to look at a figure? Maybe I date myself a little bit, but I remember the passing of Mother Teresa. Everybody said, oh, what a wonderful religious person that she was, and think about all of the good works that she did in all of her life. No doubt she did have a lot of. But all she did do a lot of good in her life. She didn't live under the covenant of God. She didn't submit herself to Him. And so we have friends, we have family, and we think, well, that they were denominationalist, and they lived this good life. Or maybe we look at someone and say, they're a good, moral person, and they've lived their life, and weren't they good people? Well, they were good to others. They did help a lot of people. But there still were those terms, depart from me, I never knew you, because they didn't live under the contract. Paul would speak about people in his own time. His own brethren, according to the flesh, in Romans 10, verse 1 through 4, and it tore his heart out. Well, I know they have this zeal for God, but it's not according to knowledge. And they go about to establish their own righteousness. Really, what they're doing is they're trying to define the terms of the contract with God, and He's already set the contract before them. They don't want to live under that contract. Paul says they're trying to establish their own contract, and it will not work. And so I want to know what kind of contract we live under. Well, I need to know. I'm living under the New Testament today. I need to know that's the covenant that I'm trying to serve God under today. And so what is that going to require? Number two, let me suggest to you that that requires comfort. Comfort with the Scriptures. My mind goes to Ephesians chapter 6. I actually know Ephesians chapter 6 and the idea there of taking upon ourselves the full armor of God. We've seen from time to time that some soldiers of Christ are always in the second verse and said, we're going to take upon ourselves the whole panoply of God. That means that's Ephesians 6. It's going to be the whole armor of God. I'm going to take it upon myself. I think about it in this form and paint a visual picture for you here, I hope. And it's the idea that my mind goes to a medieval castle, a king. And he wants to arm and he wants to equip his kingdom, and so he's going to have this armory, and he is driving all of these things. We have a wall of spears and swords and lances, and we have a wall of helmets and shields and chainmail armor, and we have all of these things provided for us. How many of you imagine a king goes and locks the door to the armory and says it's right under attack? We are all of you, and we're going to go in and grab whatever you want and go out and defend this kingdom. Is it going to cause some sort of pain in the heart? It's the energy to use my equipment. Don't you train your energy to become comfortable with it so that when we're under attack, when we go off the battle, you're not going to be at ease. You're going to be comfortable with it. They have an illustration of providing for us in mind and talking about. Samuel 17, David's going to go there with Saul, and he's going to say, I'll go out now, defend the kingdom, but what is it to me? He said, I can't believe it around me. Because I haven't proved it. I've never tried it. I've never tested it. I've never used it. One of the words that is defined for proving that is that innovation. I can't effectively use it. I want to use what I do. Of course, it goes out of those five smooth stones. But a private man is what's something about this armor of God that Paul presents for us in Ephesians chapter 6. And it begins there in verse 10,
Thank you.